Good afternoon, thanks for your time. As Darryl alluded to before, I'm going to expand on Federated Farmers' position on the physiographic model and how we believe it should sit outside the plan. I'd also like to provide reference to a recent Sustainable Farming Fund application by E3 Scientific. This aims to provide a farm interface for physiographic environments, and this information came to our attention last week, so apologies for the lateness of my information. And as a farmer in the Waituna catchment, I want to give some practical examples of how good management practice, farmer engagement, is a much more powerful tool in influencing water quality than regional blanket rules. So, as we heard from Darryl earlier, the physiographics model is not an appropriate tool for driving regulatory change. The model does actually not address land use effects, so we believe that it should not inform policy due to that reason. It's best put in the hands of farmers and industry professionals to drive the application of GMP at a farm-specific level. Project manager for E3 Scientific and the initial developer of the physiographic science, Dr. Clint Risman, in collaboration with a wide group of industry and Southland farmers, has applied to the Sustainable Farming Fund to produce a farmer-led interface for physiographic environments. Now, the project, and this is directly out of the Sustainable Farming Fund application, the project aims to improve water quality by placing state-of-the-art science into the hands of farmers and into the heart of their land use decision. So the basis for the project, it aims to create a free web-based platform to inform farmers on their land use decisions. It is Federated Farmers' view that the strength of any tool like physiographics is best utilised in the hands of farmers. It allows for farmer engagement, innovation, further refinement and ground truthing of any related science or land use practices. So it backs up the point that we want physiographics to sit outside of the plan, because it becomes a tool that, when put in the hands of farmers, it can be ground truth, it can evolve, it can have farmer input to become a better tool and actually inform good management practice. When we see it locked into the plan, it's there, it's set in stone, it can't be changed. There has to be an actual policy change to make any changes to those physiographic maps. And that also includes the variants that are actually within the physiographic zones. So, in the Sustainable Fund application, I just want to read directly from it, one of the project outcomes. The outcomes of placing the physiographics of New Zealand, and it's called the PNZ science, in the hands of farmers will be significant and enduring. The proposed project will give a strong and independent evidence base for targeted locations for on-farm mitigations. Giving this understanding to farmers and industry groups, supporting them, will put the ball back in their court. It should increase their ability to develop and better target mitigation packages that are both effective and least cost. The economic value of improving knowledge in this area cannot be overstated, and it will ultimately play a part in improving New Zealand's competitive advantage in its export markets. So the project includes a farmer-led steering group, and it will have support from industry and also Environment Southland's land sustainability team. And when I've been here listening to submissions in the past, it has been part of a lot of farmer submissions that the land sustainability team is held in quite high regard. It's not a, it's not a combative relationship, it's a learning environment, it's an engagement process. And farmers are actually willing to go through that process because they see a lot of advantage in that. And as Bernadette has previously mentioned, that if you have, say, an Appendix N, that's an engaging process that's not forced upon the farming community, they will actually take that and they will use that if they see it as a benefit to their farm and their farming practice. So farmer engagement is key. Now, part of the physiographics, and Daryl had tabled this earlier, is that the physiographics as applied in the proposed water and land plan with 9 zones lacks that finer grain detail to be applied at farm level. Talking to Dr. Risman, physiographics can actually be applied out to a maximum of 1,000 zones, and he believes a minimum of 27. So if we look at the physiographic map up here, the province has actually been condensed into 9 zones, and then there's been a policy level applied over top of that. Talking to Dr. Risman, we can actually expand that out to a maximum of 1,000 zones and a minimum of 27. So you can actually stand on your property as a farmer and say, okay, this is how water behaves where I'm standing now, and this is how it could affect water quality. And going back to Tom, actually realising that it doesn't inform in-stream water quality, but it will tell you how your farming practice on that specific place may affect water quality. Now that's powerful stuff in the hands of farmers, but when you look at it in the plan, condensed down to 9 zones, and then with policy applied over top of it, you're unfairly disadvantaging some people by trying to condense those zones down into what is a manageable tool for applying policy. So that is the key reason why we believe that by all means use the physiographics, you grow the science, put it in the hands of farmers and let it be used, but let it be used outside of the plan. So the condensing of the zones within the plan is an oversimplification of landscape variability. We know that Southland is very variable, and applying rules within this condensed format unfairly impacts some landowners compared to others. We as farmers are innovative and adaptable. Our primary industries are dynamic and at times volatile. Within our own businesses, we learn strategies to deal with these variables. These strategies are constant and continually evolve. The same premise can be applied to how we deal with our environment. What works for the farm across the road may not necessarily work for the farm up the hill. Broad blanket rules differing between zones as applied in the plan does not allow for innovation, and it does not allow for evolution. Putting the science in the hands of the farmers to be applied through good management practices engages and empowers farmers to make tangible change. And I'll touch on that a little bit further, using the Waituna catchment as an example in which my family farms. So Southland does have an example of how the farmer and wider community engagement can affect change, and this is evident in Waituna catchment. While initially it was a reactive approach, farmers in the catchment quickly became proactive in making change when provided with the right support and the right information. There is no reason, when refined, this approach can be applied across Southland using good management practice as a vehicle. My family farms in the Waituna catchment. We are lucky that we have built succession, as the initial response and reaction to those in the catchment crippled the ability to sell or diversify farming practice. It created stress, uncertainty, and alienation within the wider community. And there are still farmers in the catchment that are severely impacted today, who can't sell their properties because of the way that that initial process was handled. What we do have in the catchment now is an extremely high number of engaged farmers with a deep understanding of their land and wider environment and continual evolution. It shows how a community can unite together, improve water quality by starting on farm and then extending that out to a catchment level. It shows how industry is willing to support their farmers, their members, or their levy payers, all voluntary with no rules. Environment Southland was involved in supporting farmers with the help of industry by engaging these farmers with farm visits and advice on management practices. There was also facilitation of groups and meetings along the way. The farm visits comprised of an environmental assessment. Farmer engagement of dairy, sheep and beef and grazing farms was close to 100% in the catchment. Farmers then developed action plans, implemented these actions and provided updates on progress. After 2 years, there were 584 recommendations, 70% implemented, keeping in mind that some of these are actually long-term recommendations as well. A further 189 actions over and above recommendations were implemented, with over $1 million invested over that three-year period. The farmer engagement also led to wider community projects and investment in multiple trials. Tom is right to point out that water quality does not provide a definitive indicator for receiving environment or lagoon health. This is no more evident in my tuna catchment. The receiving environment is dynamic and relies on mechanical intervention, initially as a drainage mechanism, but now we see in the Waituna Lagoon opening consent, there are also conditions within that consent to deal with water quality. Waituna is a living example of where a community can work together to gain both community and environmental outcomes, and this is our way forward. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have Christine Morris.
No, it's an interesting project, don't you? Sustainability.
Yeah, seems to be the way forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just point out for the record that I have been heavily involved in Waituna, so I do have some knowledge down there, just for the record. Can I just pick up on your point? You're suggesting that the physiographic should sit outside the plan. Are you suggesting an appendix or outside altogether?
The Federation has asked that it sit outside altogether, but it could be. The beauty of physiographics is that it helps inform good management practice. So it can be used as a tool to help develop Appendix N, but there be no direct reference to it.
Okay, so picking up on the next point that you raised was that you were talking about putting it in the hands of farmers to make decisions and truth test it on farm and use it to help them make decisions. If there are variances from what is being, in this case, 9 physiographics, and you've suggested it could even be more. Where's the major database, in your view, set? So there's a reference point for everyone to look at to see what the changes are or not.
So part of the Sustainable Farming Fund application, the main basis for it is to actually create a web portal where you could type in location, and then you get an actual description of a physiographic description of that location. So you could have, you know, Clint's mentioned that there could be 1,000 zones. So you could have multiple zones on your farm. So, you know, you could apply good management practice to different zones on the farm based on looking through that web portal.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I want to get back to federated farmers suggesting that there are going to be changes made to the physiographics. The VES is going to use it in any way. They will need somewhere to rely on a master copy or somewhere that there's actually the major base of that information is kept.
That's the whole basis for our submission, is that the physiographics aren't used as a regulatory tool and sit outside the plan.
Yeah, and I'm trying to explore, if it sits outside the plan, where is it kept? Because if it's not kept at ES, why would ES use it? If it's kept in a portal somewhere and it's only interactive, is that the right place to keep it?
If it's put in the hand of farmers to inform good management practice, then that's where it has its real strength and power.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I don't have a question, but just to let you know, the physiographic zones are probably one of the more tricky issues that we're going to have to deal with as a panel. We've put questions to council's solicitor, Council, about whether or not the physiographic maps can be removed from the plan and the implications of that. And the problem we have is that if they are removed from the plan, but nevertheless referred to in the plan in a policy or an objective, then they're incorporated by reference into the plan anyway. So it really only seems that if we wanted to remove physiographics from the plan, we'd have to remove from the plan all references to them as well. Which is kind of throwing out the baby with the bathwater, so it's a tricky issue for us to deal with. I just wanted to let you know that. But the questions we posed regarding that and the answers are on the web page, so you might be interested in having a look at that. I don't have any direct questions of you, but as a team, I do have a question. A month or two ago, there were, I think, a group of seven primary sector industry leaders stood on the banks of the Tuki Tuki River in Hawke's Bay and acknowledged that there was a water quality problem in New Zealand, and that they committed their associations, which included Federated Farmers, to making rivers in New Zealand swimmable again. You know, you definitely would be aware of that because your boss was part of that group on the banks of the Tuki Tuki River. So I'm just curious to know how is Federated Farmers going to implement that sort of promise here in Southland?
I can make some reference to that. And I mean, Southland is quite particular as far as when we would like to engage in a swimming practice in our rivers. And we know full well the water temperature is the biggest driver for anyone wanting to swim in the rivers. And really, does it get above 18 degrees? And I looked at the Arete, and I looked at the Matara, and I looked at the Aparima, and for only about 2 months of the year do we see temperatures above 18 degrees, and only for short periods of time. So it's not... it's a desirable outcome to be able to choose to do, but in reality, because of water temperature, we don't tend to do it very often. And that doesn't mean that farmers have a free rein for 10 months of the year, let's say, that we can do anything we like, because we don't hold that view at all either. But the swimmability is certainly, it's an idealism, but there's also a degree of reality that in Southland most people will swim in a swimming pool temperature controlled. And that's where certainly the Kākau people swim, and I know that's in some part because of the river is tidal at Invercargill. Sydney Arete Beach is a better place to swim in the summertime. Where I live at Picton, I do swim in the river, and I've made a point of saying that on national television that I swim in the river, and I did in February this year swim in the Arete, and I will drink it at my farm, but I wouldn't say I drink it all the way down the river. But there's certainly farmers do, and they want to engage in this process. But we also, we're a reasonably diverse bunch, and some are easier to engage in the process and others are not. And you'll get easily uplift by probably 20 to 30% of the farmers to any new process. Others will come along, and there will be a group who will be slow to engage. And Graham didn't really talk too much about the point that in the Waituna, that there were, it took a while for everyone to engage, but eventually they did. And that peer pressure aspect is something that can't be underestimated as to what brings farmers on board. And locking down at a catchment level or a sub-catchment level, you'll get that finer engagement. And the ones who've failed to take on board what the majority are doing will be seen in a very light, and eventually those people too, one hopes, will come on board. But it's trust. And that's where you sit in that difficult space is, do you trust us? Do you trust us enough to allow us to do good management practices? Do you trust us that the current plan that we've got had a lot of engagement by the community to put together, and therefore there wasn't a rule for everything. There was an expectation that they will do the best they can and what information's available. And that information's continually changing and new stuff is coming available. So keep the document flexible. Don't make it rigid.
All right, well, thanks very much to Federated Farmers for coming in and presenting the material to us.
Too late? Am I too late, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, you are, but go on.
Just while I'm here, just wanted to make reference to the Canterbury Land and Water Plan, its use of overseer that it references the current
version. I just inform you that Commissioner Allison and I have sat on the regional land, the land and water plan hearings from Canterbury and on variations 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and 6 of that plan, so we're pretty familiar with it before you go on.
I do know that, Mr. Chairman. And so Overseer is a tool which is sits outside of the plan, but it's referenced inside of the plan at the current version, so that whilst it is used as a function of the plan in terms of limits, Overseer is not held by the Regional Council. It is not administered by the Regional Council. Every time Overseer version is changed, if it was resting inside the plan, you'd need plan variation. And I suppose that that's one advantage to, in terms of the mechanisms here, to having something like a physiographics tool sitting outside the plan that can be changed, can be modified over time. You don't have to come back for a variation to the plan every time. That's all I'd like to.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that was a comment within your sphere of expertise or not, but never mind. And I just note that Overseer is a computer model, so it can't sit inside the plan anyway. All right, thank you very much.
One more thing I said at the beginning, I would have a concluding remark, and I'll keep it short. I had a whole stuff here that I won't actually run through, but I just did want to bring up, and you made a comment earlier that you hadn't read the previous plan, or the current plan, the regional water plan, and I've given you a copy of Objective 4 of the regional plan, where that's the objective that was the previous South and Chairman talked a lot about, a minimum of 10% improvement in the level of water quality parameters. So this is trying. And so in Objective 4, there was this graph that showed the Areke River at Wallacetown. And supposedly the trend information suggested that we would have high nitrate levels by now, upwards of 1.5 grams, milligrams per litre by 2015. And that if we extrapolated forward from 2005 through to 2015 and then improved it by 10%, then this is the level that we'd be hoping for in the Areke at Wallacetown. And so I looked at the data that came from NIWA's data, and looking at median information, so for the 12 months to January 2005, which I guess is the star dot in the middle, the median data was 1.2 milligrams per litre. Go forward to 2015, and the median data is 0.87 of a milligram. This is a 27% improvement. In 2016, the median value was 0.94. of a milligram, so it changed, but it changed only a small amount. So I believe there were good things happening in that previous plan, and I know you say you don't want to look at that, it's not your role, but I just do want to reiterate there's a lot of good things in that plan because it was put together by the community. And I believe there's trust and empathy in that current plan, and I implore you to work harder to ensure that this character is not lost in the new plan.
Yeah, we often at these hearings get people who are fondly attached to the antecedent plans. We've had that in Canterbury and I've struck it all across New Zealand. All I can say is that it's our job to look at the plan as notified, this plan, not the previous plan, the submissions lodged, and to consider if and how the provisions should be changed within the scope of submissions lodged. And that sounds overly legalistic, and that's deliberately so. We simply can't do anything other than that. But we do take all submissions seriously, and you've provided a lot of detail and helpful detail in your submission, and I can assure you that the work you put in won't be wasted.
Thank
you. All right.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. So we now adjourn and reconvene at 9 a.m.